This message, titled An Impossible Separation from James chapter 2, verses 18 and 19, was preached at Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Winchester, Kansas. For more information, visit us at winchesterrp.com.
Brothers and sisters, there's an old saying. I think the saying actually originated in the world of journalism. There's an old saying that has often been applied to preaching, and it goes like this. Preaching should comfort those who are afflicted, but preaching should also afflict those who are comfortable. And there's a good degree of truth in that pithy saying. There are some people who are spiritually burdened, some people who are spiritually broken and spiritually wounded and tender in conscience. And what they need is they need to be comforted in the midst of their afflictions. And there's an important role in the preaching of God's word to that end, to not break a bruised reed and to not put out the smoldering flax. But there are others, brothers and sisters, who are spiritually dead. There are others who are spiritually calloused and spiritually hardened. And what they need is to be spiritually afflicted, to have the truth of God bear down and weigh upon their consciences in a way in which, through that spiritual affliction, they turn more to God's truth. And that also, brothers and sisters, is an important part of preaching. And this morning, I doubt most of us could be distinguished clearly into one of these two categories. There are probably areas in all of our lives where we need spiritual comfort. And there are probably areas in all of our lives where we need a little more, you might say, spiritual affliction. And I imagine this morning that that is very present, and that is a reality of us as we gather together. And of course, when we come to do that and minister, you might say, in that double capacity, and mediate between comforting those who need comfort and afflicting those who need to be a little afflicted, that comes, humanly speaking, with a little bit of a risk. And the risk is, in speaking God's truth, that sometimes those who are afflicted can be further wounded. And sometimes, in speaking God's truth, those who are a little too comfortable can be placated in their comfort. And so there is, again, humanly speaking, always a risk that we will stumble and fall in one of these two places. Now, I choose to frame the message this morning and to introduce it in that way because, in a very real sense, I feel that tension. I feel that risk. Because James, as he writes in this section of his letter, and as it's been preserved for us by the singular care of the Holy Spirit, James is not writing these words to those who are spiritually burdened, and to those, you might say, that are spiritually wounded and find themselves in a tender place. James is not writing this section of his letter to comfort those who are afflicted. But James is writing this section of his letter to afflict those who are too comfortable. To afflict those, brothers and sisters, as we've begun to see, who have confused and changed God's good truth by wrongly defining the relationship that exists between faith and works. Those who content themselves with a Christianity, you might say, that consists merely in words and never in action. Those whom the scriptures would style as hypocrites. Some who will go to their eternal destiny, crying out in the words that Jesus spoke, "Did we not?" And Christ will say, I never knew you. James is not writing this to comfort the afflicted, but he is writing it to afflict us in our sinful spiritual complacency. And in that, there is a challenge. There's a challenge to all of us, to you as well as to me, as we continue in this section of James's letter. Now, this morning, my thoughts run in this direction. As we look at verses 18 and 19, first, we're going to notice the interjection. Secondly, the impossibility. And finally, this morning, the illustration. James writes these words, but someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that God is one. You do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. First, then, this morning, I want you to notice and spend some time here on what I want to call the interjection. The interjection. Now, if you remember, it's been a couple of weeks since we were here in this letter, but maybe you remember the way in which James, or rather what it is that James has just written. James says in verse 17, as we had time to see, so also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. And then the picture that we almost get is before, if we can put it this way, before the ink is even dry on the parchment, James foresees, you might say, he foresees what someone might say in response to him. That's because James, as we've seen throughout this letter, James is a good pastor. And he understands the way in which people are going to respond to the things that he says. And as he writes those words, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead, James understands what it is that somebody might immediately interrupt him and say, well, James, what about this? And might offer this interjecting comment. And James enters, if you want to think about verse 18 in these ways, James, foreseeing that interjection, he enters into what you might call a bit of a dialogue. And what is it that James says? Well, in verse 18, James says, but someone will say, you have faith and I have works. So the character of this, it's an interjection. James telling us faith without works is dead. Oh, but somebody's going to interject. Somebody's going to raise a comment. Somebody is going to speak to this. And what happens? What happens is James writes this, someone will say, you have faith and I have works. What's happening here? Well, brothers and sisters, on the one hand, I want you to notice that what James begins to say here, in one sense, is repetitive. In one sense, it is repetitive. Repetition is not a bad thing, is it? Remember when I was in elementary school, my third grade teacher would always tell us to do something, and then she would make us say out loud, not once, not twice, but three times, the instruction that she gave us. And she did that, and she always emphasized with us, science shows that if you repeat something to yourself a minimum of three times, you are more likely to remember that which has been said to you. And if you can think in those terms, that's essentially what James is doing here. In one sense, James is going to be repeating himself, because he wants our minds and he wants our hearts to remember the truth that he's emphasizing here. And why does James want to do that? Why is James being repetitive? Well, he's being repetitive for this reason, brothers and sisters. What James is writing in this section of his letter is really important. It is really, really, really important to a right understanding of the apostolic gospel. To get wrong what James is saying here is not a little thing. It's not an insignificant thing. It is a massively important thing. James, if we were to go back and remember some of the things that he has written to this point, James has emphasized in different ways and in different words the very truth he's trying to bring about in this section. Maybe you remember in chapter 1, verse 18, as James is writing about the Word of God. And in verse 18 of chapter 1, he says, "Of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures." James saying, this is the reason God has recreated us, that we might be a kind of first fruits, that we might live in the honor and in the service of God. Maybe you remember the way that James emphasized beginning in verse 22 of chapter 1. Saying, if all you are is a hearer of the word and you never do the word, that's useless, it's pointless. James pleading with us, don't simply be hearers of the word, you've got to be doers of the word as well. Or what James says in verse 27 of chapter 1. This is what pure religion is. Pure service, pure devotion to God consists, he says, in caring for widows and orphans and keeping yourself unstained from the world. James is emphasizing, as we've already seen in verse 17 of this chapter, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. James is being repetitive, brothers and sisters, because we've got to remember this. We've got to get it drilled into our minds and our hearts what it is that James is saying here of the importance of this relationship between faith and works. But I also want you to see in this interjection that James isn't simply or only being repetitive. Rather, there is a slight difference. That there is a little, it's nuanced, but there is a little bit of a change in James's direction. If you remember in verse 14, what is it that somebody says? James says in verse 14, "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith, but does not have works?" James is saying there, as we had time to see, what good is it to say with your mouth, "I have faith," but there's no works to back that up? And then notice that the slight change, the nuanced change in verse 18, in this person that James imagines is going to interject. "But someone will say, you have faith and I have works." See, James, in one sense, I want you to see this. James, in a detailed way, James is adding to the picture. In verse 14, the person who is speaking is the person who simply says, "I have faith." There's no place for works. There's no reason for works. Works can be entirely, completely absent. All that matters is faith. But the person in verse 18 that is interjecting is, if we can paraphrase it this way, the person interjecting in verse 18 is essentially saying, "Okay, James, I get it. Works are important. Faith without works is dead. Works are important, but not for everyone. One person can have faith, and another person can have works. One person can have faith, James, and I get the place of work, so you're right to a certain degree. Works are important, but they're not important for everyone. One person may have faith, another person may have works." And you see what this interjector is saying. The effect of what he is saying, that as important as works may be, faith and works can be completely separated. One person can have faith, another person can have works, but there is no necessity for these two to ever meet. There can be a complete, right? He's not writing here about a complete absence of works, but he is writing about a complete separation of faith and works. Somebody can have faith without works. Another person can have works without faith. To each their own. All roads lead to the same place. This interjector is essentially saying, let each person do and follow the path that they want. Let each have their own way. One will have faith, the other will have works. The one who has works, he may not have faith. And the one who has faith, he may not have works. But James, it doesn't really matter, because faith and works are so separate, there is no need for them to ever meet. And when we understand that this is the interjection, that this is what is being said, we begin to see the pastoral brilliance of James. Because what James is doing, what he foresees, even as he's writing this letter, what James foresees is really, right? James is a spiritual doctor. And he knows how to diagnose the heart. And he knows that ever in the lives, even of God's people, this is the attitude that can easily niggle in. It's easy on the one hand to say, you know what? Faith is all that matters. It doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter if I obey God. Don't tell me about being obedient to God and walking in it. I believe in God. I say it. That should be good enough for everybody. It doesn't matter if I have works in my life. And there's on the other hand, the other temptation that says, works, 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 works. I may not be one who believes in God, but it's really important that I just do some of the right things. That I be nice to other people, that I help other people. And I don't know about this thing called faith. That's not for me. That's for those people over there. But all that matters for me is to work, 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 work. And James understands this is a diagnosis of the human heart. This is where we often fall, and we are a conflict. We are a complex conflict, which means that our hearts are often pulled in both of these directions. In both of these directions, but the root is the same. The root is what is at the heart of this interjection, and that is that faith and works can ultimately be divided and completely separated one from the other, and there is no need for faith and works to meet in our lives. That's the interjection. That's what James is dealing with here, is the one who says, well, you have faith, I have works. Let each go their own way. And how does James respond then to that interjection? Well, James responds by pointing out what can simply be called the impossibility of it all. The impossibility. Again in verse 18, but someone will say, you have faith and I have works. And then what does James do? James throws the gauntlet down. And James says, okay, if that's what you want to say, show me your faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. James is throwing the gauntlet down. And what James is saying, if we can think of it in these terms, James is saying, okay, you think that one person can have faith, and another person can have works, and never shall these two meet. James is saying, okay, well, let's put your logic to the test. Show me your faith. Show me your faith. And of course, we can probably almost, if we step into their shoes for a moment, we can almost imagine the way this hypothetical dialogue might go. Somebody saying, James, show you my faith. Faith isn't a physical object. It's not something tangible. It's not something that I can hold forth in my hands and say, see, James, look at my faith. And James rebutting, no, I told you, you need show me your faith. Show me that which is invisible. And you can imagine this person, perhaps, this interjector looking at James and saying, well, James, I can't show you my faith, but what if I tell you about my faith? And James says, no, you need to show me your faith. Well, James, what if I just describe faith to you? What if I just give you a dictionary definition? Will that make you happy? And James saying, no, you need to show me your faith. Okay, James, what if I just share my testimony with you? Tell you about the history of my faith. And James saying, no. You need to show me your faith. And this person may be saying, all right, how about I just assert to you that I have faith? How about I just say it, that I believe? And James saying, no, 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 show me your faith. Show it to me. If faith and works can be so separated and so distinguished from one another, never shall the two meet. James is laying the gauntlet down and he's saying, then show me your faith. Show it to me. And of course, the point is so simple. The point is, it's impossible. It's as impossible, and on this level, it is as ridiculous as telling somebody, show me you're a great athlete without using sports. Show me you're a musician, but don't use music to do it. Show me you're an artist, but don't do it through art. But the point is, it's impossible. It is impossible. And that's what James is saying. James is saying you cannot show faith without works, because works, brothers and sisters, works are the only way that faith is demonstrated. Works are the only way that faith evidences itself. Works are the only way that faith is shown. It is through our works that that which is invisible, that which cannot be seen with human eyes, that which is intangible, is demonstrated and shown and evidenced. It is only through works. And we need to feel the force of that. Because again, what James is saying here, brothers and sisters, and this is not to be swept away as some kind of Pharisaical legalism or as something that undermines the glorious gospel of Jesus Christ. But what James is saying with all the force that he can, faith without works is not real faith. It's not real. James's language here in verse 17 is that it's dead. James's language here in verse 20 is that it is useless. James's language here in the 26th verse is that it is dead. It is a dead, useless, dead faith. That's the force and that's the emphasis of what James is saying. James is saying faith shows itself by what we do. Faith evidences itself and demonstrates itself by our works. James says, show me your faith apart from works, and I will show you my faith by my works. And what does James mean there? How are we to understand? What are these works that James is writing of? Well, let's not make this too complex. If we take James in his context, we should immediately know exactly what works James is talking about. James is talking about that royal law. James is talking about that royal law of liberty, that pure law of God. The pure law of God lived out of love to him and neighbor. Those are the works that evidence faith. Those are the works that make faith visible. It's the law of love. Love as it is defined and love as it is directed. Love as it is determined not by our culture, not by our society, not by Hollywood, not by our desires, not by our emotions, but love as it is defined and directed by God himself. That's what James is saying. I will show you my faith by my works of love. It is essentially, brothers and sisters, it is essentially the same thing that the Apostle Paul says elsewhere. Maybe you remember in Galatians chapter 5. The Galatians were boasting about what? They were boasting about circumcision and all the ceremonies and all the rituals that they observed in their lives. And Paul in Galatians chapter 5 has had it with them. And he says to them, don't you understand circumcision or non-circumcision? It's nothing. It's nothing. All your ceremonies and all your rituals, they're nothing. And in Galatians chapter 5, verse 6, he says, but here is what matters. Faith working through love. Faith working through love. Brothers and sisters, it's just Christianity 101. That this is what faith does. Faith shows itself. It shows itself in love. No matter how big that faith is, wherever true faith is present, it always demonstrates itself. It always shows itself. It always evidences itself in love. It always does. They go hand in hand. It is impossible to separate these two. And that's what James is getting at. You say that some people can have faith and other people can have works. You say that works can exist without faith and faith can exist without works. And James is saying your logic is impossible. It's impossible. Because faith works through love. Faith always shows itself in a love to God and into a love of neighbor. So that these two are not enemies, but here in the Christian life, they walk hand in hand. James says, "Show me your faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works." And in so doing, he's pointing out the impossibility that faith can exist apart from works. But not only is there this interjection and this impossibility, but I want you to also notice this morning that James reinforces this by giving a really vivid illustration. That's one of the things, and I've noted it before and will continue to note it. James is full of illustrations. Almost every point that drips from his pen, James wants to illustrate in a practical way. And his illustrations aren't the trite, silly illustrations that you often hear, maybe even from this pulpit. They're brilliant illustrations. They're probing illustrations. They drip with so much significance. And James gives here to reinforce the point that he's making that faith and works can't be set apart from one another, cannot be completely separated. James reinforces this with an illustration. He writes in verse 19, "You believe that God is one. You do well. Even the demons believe and shudder." And maybe before we even come to appreciate the details of the illustration, we need to understand and appreciate something of James's tone here. His tone. What do I mean by that? Well, we've seen again and again in this letter that James writes out of an abundance of brotherly love. A tremendous admiration and love for those to whom he's writing. 17 times in this letter, he calls them brothers, beloved brothers, dear brothers. Everything that James writes in these, what we have as five chapters, is written in the ink of love, from the depths of brotherly affection. But what we need to see as James comes to this illustration, even as he's writing as one who loves these people, James is not, in this illustration, James is not what we would normally call nice. James is not obeying the rules, in one sense, of what we regard in our society as being polite and nice. You know, that's emphasized in many ways in this 20th verse. "Do you want to be shown, you foolish person? You foolish person." And when James writes that, that's not playground banter. James is saying something significant there. He's saying if this is the way that you reason, if this is the way that you understand the relationship that exists between faith and works, you're a fool. You have forsaken knowledge. You have forsaken insight. You have forsaken wisdom. The very word that James uses here for fool means empty and fruitless and useless. And James is saying, if this is your logic, if this is the way in which you understand your Christianity, you are useless. It's a vain and it's fruitless. It's foolish in every way. That's not very nice. That's not very nice. That's not how we often teach our kids to mind their P's and to mind their Q's. But here's a point for us, and it's this. James loves them enough to say even the hardest things to them. James loves them enough to not always say, we can frame it in these words, he loves them enough that he doesn't always just say the nice and the polite things. Look at this illustration. You believe that God is one. You do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. Even the demons believe and shudder. What's fascinating about this illustration is that what James is doing in this single sentence, he is comparing the quote-unquote faith of this person who's speaking to him this way with the quote-unquote faith of demons. He's saying, let's compare what you call faith with what the demons might call faith. And in bringing up this illustration, we need to appreciate that as James frames these words, this illustration that he is using is intended in a very real sense to humiliate and humble the one who reasons in this way. It is a humbling illustration. James says in verse 19, you believe that God is one. And again, remember we read from Deuteronomy 6. This was the confession of Israel. This was their confession of faith. We often think maybe of the Apostles' Creed that many of us have been taught, or maybe you think about the Westminster Confession of Faith, which is the doctrinal basis of our church. Deuteronomy 6:4, the Shema, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one, was the confession of faith of the Old Testament church. And James is saying here in the 19th verse, you believe that. You believe that God is one. Well, jolly well good for you. That's a good thing to believe. So far, so good. You believe that God is one. Good for you. But then James is saying, before you pat yourself on the back, hear this. The demons do too. The demons believe too that God is one. And what effect does it have on the demons? The demons shudder. The demons shudder. So the effect of this illustration, brothers and sisters, and it is a humbling illustration, the effect of the illustration is this. The demons believe the very thing that you say you believe, and it actually does something to them. You think that you can believe this and not have it change your life one jot or one tittle. Look at the demons. The demons believe that God is one, and they shudder. The demons. The fiends of hell, the ones whom Jude tells us in such colorful language, those whom did not stay in their positions of authority, but abandoned themselves. The demons whom Jude tells us are presently kept in eternal chains under gloomy darkness for the day of judgment. And what James is saying, they have a better faith than you do. If you think that you can separate faith from works, that never do these two need to meet, that you can be content having a faith that does not work, James is saying you're less than the demons in hell. James is saying, can we quantify it this way? James is saying the demons do better than you because at least they shudder. At least they shudder in their knowledge that God is one. They have, if we can call it this, they have a better faith than the one to whom James is writing. And that illustration is not nice, but that illustration, brothers and sisters, it packs a punch. It packs a punch against anybody who claims to be a Christian, but does not live out that Christianity in the works of godly love. That illustration cuts against anybody who thinks, well, I'm a Presbyterian and that's good enough. If you don't have love, you're nothing. You're worse than the demons. It cuts across all those who perhaps have the shorter catechism memorized and they can tell you the outline of the Westminster Confession of Faith. If you don't have love, it is nothing. It cuts against those who say, well, every week I drag myself and my family, we sit in church, we go through the motions, I do what I'm supposed to do, and James is saying, but if your faith isn't working by love, it is useless. It is less than what the demons do. It's a humbling illustration, but it's pointed and it's forceful. And of course, the logical conclusion is, if the demons are in hell and they do better than you, can your faith save? Can your faith save? It's hard, but it's necessary. And James understands that eternity hangs on our understanding. Eternity hangs on a faith that works by love. And maybe the application here, brothers and sisters, very simply, maybe the application can come down to this. Do you have people in your life who are willing to say this to you? Do you have people in your life that are willing to challenge you in this kind of way? You say you're a Christian. You say you have faith. Where's your love to God and to neighbor? Without getting into all the details, I am who I am today, and I am where I am today because a friend really hurt me with these words. Kyle, you say you're a Christian, but look at your miserable life. And it changed everything because somebody was willing to love me in the same way that James is loving us in the words that he's writing to us. I pity the person that doesn't have people in their lives that are willing to confront them the way that James is willing to confront us. Or maybe a little more to an applicatory point, are you this kind of person in other people's lives? Parents, do you ever sit down and challenge your children? They say they believe. But does their faith work by love? Are you the kind of person that would be willing to challenge your spouse, friends, people in this church to speak the hard truths? Maybe even more applicatory this morning, are you willing to ask yourself these questions? To say, Lord, show me if my faith is one that works by love. Because friends, at the end of the day, what a thing it is to live this life complacent in the idea that you have faith, only to have it exposed as a dead and a useless faith. And James is writing these words. James is not writing this to comfort the afflicted, but to afflict the comfortable. To those who think that faith and Christianity and what it means to be a believer is a matter of words, 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 and only words. And James is saying, no. That kind of faith is worse than the faith of demons. And you need to wake up. And you need to be honest. And you need to be transparent. Because where faith is, it always works by love. James is afflicting the comfortable. And we leave it this morning in the hand of the Spirit, whose great glory and ministry it is to convict us of sin and of righteousness and of judgment to come. Let's pray.